Hi guys, this is Dr. Erin Stair, Dr. Eeks, as some of you know me, and it's another episode of Causes or Cures. Hope you guys are doing okay. So today's topic is pretty timely since the Super Bowl is this week. It's actually today when I'm recording this. I do plan on watching it. I'm kind of a fan of Tom Brady. I mean, he's such a great player. But I'm just so inspired by the fact that he's in his 40s and beating out these young guys in their early 20s, because to me, it's a testament of how he trains and his healthy lifestyle. And it's inspirational. I think it's inspirational for people as they age that, wow, there's so much you can do to keep your biological age younger and still in the game, quite literally, top of his game. That's another podcast. Maybe Tom Brady will come on Causes or Cures. But anyhow, today's topic is a little more serious. It's NFL football players and cognitive decline later in life. Now, this topic has been in the news quite a bit. There's been high profile cases of former NFL players with cognitive decline or dementia. Of course, it's linked to how many hits they take, or concussions they have, or head injuries. Now, we know that a history of head trauma is a significant risk factor for cognitive decline later in life. That's for anybody. So I would imagine, you know, well, you don't have to be a genius to figure out that it's probably higher for NFL football players who take a lot of hits to their head. Now, some parents, they don't want their kids to play football. I hear a lot from them. They're nervous. They're nervous about their kids getting hit in the head. Some people want the NFL to do more to address this issue or to prevent it. So we know that getting hit in the head is a risk factor. But here's the question. Are there other risk factors for cognitive decline that are modifiable, that we can maybe, you know, do things to reduce the chance of cognitive decline happening despite all these head injuries? To talk about this issue, Dr. Andrea Roberts joins me on Causes or Cures. She is a senior researcher at Harvard, and she studied this issue as part of the Football Players Health Study. So she's going to talk about what some of these modifiable risk factors are, and if, you know, NFL players can maybe change, address some of these things and reduce their risk of getting cognitive decline later in life. So this is an interesting topic to me because this is, again, about things that people can do rather than just kind of shrugging their shoulders and like, well, it's hopeless. I'm just going to lose my mind later in life. Anyhow, okay, so before I jump into this, just so you know, we recorded this after work during dinner hours. That's the only time I had to do it because I've been working on the COVID-19 public health response and she's been super busy, but she was really, she was awesome because she's like, yeah, I'll do it at night. And then I'm like, well, that's the only time I can record this too. But anyhow, you might hear some dishes clanging in the background. I did my best to edit them out as much as I could. There was some probably on my end, some on her end, but you can still hear what she's saying. And it's important stuff. It's really important stuff. And I left, you know, with some hope after, because getting cognitive decline is horrible. And we tend to worship these NFL football players when they're playing. And we don't even think about the people who are there and don't actually get in the game, tons of other people. And then later in life, when they get these issues, we're just like, oh, we don't even think about them, right? Because they're not stars anymore. And that's not right. So, that's a reason I wanted to do this podcast. All right, enough babbling from me. Let's jump in and hear what Dr. Roberts has to say. Dr. Roberts, you can still hear me okay, right?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. So I'm excited to talk to you about this this topic. It's been on my mind for a while. And, you know, it comes up a lot. You know, everybody wants to play football, that kind of thing. So I do appreciate you coming on to do this. So I guess for starters, if you don't mind, just to kind of give a brief bio of who you are and what your research interests are.
Sure. I'm a senior research scientist at the Harvard Chan School of Public Health. And my research has focused actually mostly on traumatic events, psychological traumas, child abuse, and consequences of those things like depression and PTSD and risk-taking behaviors, drug use, stuff like that. However, I've become more interested in cognitive outcomes as well, cognitive decline, dementia, and those are related to the psychological outcomes.
Right.
So I've been involved with the Football Players Health Study at Harvard for about 3 years, maybe 4 years.
Okay. And that's a perfect lead in to my next question, which is, can you explain what the Harvard Football Players Health Study is?
Sure. Well, the NFL Players Association, as you might imagine, is interested in the health of former players. And they essentially hired Harvard to conduct research in an effort to understand the health needs of the former players and, you know, what sorts of things could be done to improve the health of the players.
Okay.
So the study is actually run by the Harvard Medical School, and at the School of Public Health, we do epidemiology. So, you know, we deal with the kind of larger number studies and have some expertise in statistics and, you know, that angle, whereas the med school, obviously, they're medical doctors and they understand the biology and illnesses and disease processes and stuff like that. So it's a pairing.
Right. Sure. It's an ideal place for it. So how strong is the association between head trauma, head injuries in football, and neurocognitive decline later in life?
So we actually don't have a measure of cognitive decline, but we do have a measure of cognitive function. So we asked players about sort of the ways in which their thinking and memory affect their daily functioning. So, you know, we're using kind of scales that have been validated, scales like sets of questions that have been tested in, you know, thousands of people and are kind of received the National Institutes of Health, NIH, seal of approval. So, you know, these are measures that we know how they work. You know, when you're looking, I mean, an excellent question is actually, when does this, guys enter the NFL probably being smarter than average, because it's extremely competitive to get into the NFL. You have to be functioning at a very high level, physically and mentally. But at some time from when they, you know, enter the NFL to their later life, and the average age of the people in our study was, I think, 52 or 54 at in the questionnaire that was covered in this paper. Their cognitive functioning is not great. And to answer your question, the association between their experience of concussion symptoms, so we asked them to report on hits to the head and then symptoms of concussion afterwards, like headache and dizziness and that sort of thing. So it's very, very strong.
I was gonna say, 52 seems kind of, I thought they'd be older. Like, I feel like is that young?
Well, that's the average age. I mean, they range in age, you know, from the mid 20s to the late 80s.
Oh, okay.
So in the Football Players Health Study, in this part of it, anyone who had ever signed with an NFL team, and that includes the practice squad, and now no longer plays, was eligible. So some of the guys, you know, might have been on a practice squad for 2 months, and then, you know, they're only 25. Okay. We didn't have very many people like that, to be honest. I think the average number of years in the NFL was like 5. So the guys in our study tend to be have been in the NFL for longer than typical players.
So while the focus usually is head trauma as the cause of neurocognitive decline, and that's mostly what we hear about, you know, how many hits are you taking on the playing field? You guys looked at modifiable risk factors for cognitive decline. Risk factors in general and how they're linked to cognitive decline?
Well, as you can imagine, there's lots of things that affect your cognitive function over the course of your life. Generally speaking, people start to have measurable deterioration in their cognitive function, maybe, like the mid-40s. You know, most people say, oh, yeah, I'm not as sharp as I used to be, but it's nothing that really affects their life much. And then as people age, like 70, 75, that kind of thing, you do have quote, natural decline with age that's a little more pronounced, forgetfulness and stuff like that. But then also among older people, there's also the risk for dementia. And dementia in general doesn't onset sort of till at least, say, 65. And then as you age, the risk of dementia just rises and rises. So by, say, 85, I don't know, something like maybe 40% of people have dementia. So, like, that's the kind of general picture. And most people have not had a heavy history of concussions. Lots of people have had one concussion or two concussions. You know, they played a sport when they were a kid, they fell off the playground, they slipped when they were older, whatever. So the other factors that affect dementia, genetics is a big one, but that's not modifiable. And then things like sleep apnea, sleep duration, obesity, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, like diseases, obviously, if you have a stroke, mm-hmm. your risk of cognitive decline and dementia increases a lot. But cardiovascular disease in general and diabetes are risk factors for cognitive decline. Also, you have stuff like pain or smoking and physical activity. So people who are very sedentary are at greater risk of cognitive decline versus, you know, we know exercise is good for you. Well, it turns out it's good for your brain, too. So
right.
Exercise is protective.
All right. So you kind of already touched on, I guess, who was in your study. The average age, I guess, and they played football. Do you know how long they played football for?
Anyone who ever signed with the NFL was eligible for our study, but who no longer plays. But I think the average number of years people played of the men in our study was about 5 years. And it ranges from less than a year to more than 20.
Okay. And was there, in terms of like head injuries, was there like an average number for that or?
Yeah, well, it's a bit hard to measure. I can't say like, oh, they had this number of concussions, because the way we assessed concussions was based on the number of times they'd experienced a particular symptom after getting hit in the head or the neck. So they were asked about a whole bunch of concussion symptoms, which I can run over with you if you want. Like visual problems, headache, dizziness, nausea, loss of consciousness, disorientation and confusion.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Like you see guys sort of staggering sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Feeling unsteady. So we asked them how often they experienced each of those things. So we don't really know. Like if they say 5 for each of them, we don't know. Well, were they hit 5 times and they experienced every single symptom?
Right.
For each of the hits? Or did they have, sort of half the symptoms half the time and they actually were hit 10 times and they had 10 concussions? We don't know.
Right. Yeah.
Concussions are tricky to measure actually because they're not diagnosed very thoroughly, especially in the older guys when it wasn't like there wasn't a lot of publicity around concussions. Mm. You know, they referred to them as dings or, something like that. And they didn't receive any kind of diagnosis. So, it's tricky to say.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so of these modifiable risk factors, which ones were significantly linked to cognitive decline in the football players?
Right. So the biggest one, it was concussions, which, you know, it's not obviously after the fact, it's not modifiable. But just in to compare it to some of the other risk factors, the highest guys with the highest concussion symptoms had 4.5 times risk of having cognitive impairment.
Wow.
Compared to guys. So we divided them into quarters. We added up the concussion symptoms and we divided them into 4 groups. So we compared the highest number of symptoms to the lowest.
Okay.
And those guys had 4.5 times greater risk of being impaired, like having difficulty, you know, learning a new thing or doing 2 things at once, or, you know, like remembering a short list, all those kinds of day-to-day sort of things.
Wow. And that was a statistically significant difference in all of that.
Oh, yeah. These are all statistically significant. But then if you look at the, like, factors that are potentially modifiable, so the strongest ones were associated with 2 to 3 times increased risk, and those were physical impairment. So we asked them, again, a set of questions about, like, you know, do you have difficulty, like, going up a flight of stairs? Do you have difficulty shopping, doing your socializing, or, you know, doing, you know, household chores because of your physical situation? And, you know, if they hit a certain level of that, they're considered impaired.
I see.
So that was one thing. Physical impairment was strongly associated with cognitive impairment. And then depression and anxiety.
So is this, can I just stop you? So is this is this the healthy concussed versus the unhealthy concussed?
No, we were just looking at, without looking at those groups, we were just looking at which of these factors.
So okay.
What we looked at a set of factors that are known to be risk factors for cognitive decline and dementia. And, you know, they're known because in, we sort of rate how strong the evidence is, and better evidence is like in longitudinal studies where you look at people that don't have cognitive problems, but they do have some of these other things, like they are physically impaired or they're depressed or they're anxious. And then you see, oh, over the next 5 years, how likely are they to become, you know, to get a dementia diagnosis or to have their cognitive function sort of measurably decline.
Okay.
So that's how we know these things are risk factors for cognitive problems.
Okay, can you so I know in the paper you talked about the healthy concussed versus the unhealthy concussed. Can you define what those groups are and then also what the differences in modifiable risk factors between those groups were?
Yeah, sure. So we were interested in asking the question, like, so some of these guys have a lot of concussions, have a history of a lot of concussions, but some of them are doing pretty well despite this experience of concussion. So what we did was we looked at guys who were in the top quarter of concussion symptoms. So they all experienced a lot of concussions. And then we compared the men who were not cognitively impaired, so didn't hit that threshold for problems in their daily life, you know, related to being able to do 2 things at once or remembering what you were doing or remembering a list of things, being able to read something and understand it pretty easily, that kind of thing. So the healthy concussed are people who experienced a lot of concussions but didn't have cognitive problems that were especially severe. And the unhealthy concussed were people who had these concussions but did have significant cognitive problems.
Okay. And what were the differences in the modifiable risk factors between those groups?
Right. So we were wondering, well, are these guys, have they done something else to help, you know, mitigate the effects of the concussion? And we don't really know the answer to that, but we do know that when you look at all their risk factors, they look a lot better. The guys who are doing well look a lot better. They're much less likely to have physical impairment. They're much less likely to have serious pain. They're much less likely to be depressed and anxious. Even stuff like high blood pressure, they're less likely to have high blood pressure. So, and exercise, they're more likely to exercise. And we found similar patterns when we looked at people who were healthy and unhealthy among people who experienced the fewest concussions as well, just sort of for contrast, like, oh, do we see the same pattern in guys who didn't experience that many concussions? And we do see a similar pattern.
So, it, you know, it's possible someone who has a history of head trauma can develop depression or sleep problems as a result of that injury. So there's a lot of chicken and egg questions, I know, in public health and medicine. But is it possible to know which came first? That's my first question about that.
No, it's a cross-sectional study. And as you say, the relationship among almost all of these things is very complicated. Like, depression is a risk factor for dementia, and depression is also a symptom of dementia. And once you get dementia, you may become depressed because your life is more difficult. So it's sort of, a lot of ways they're related. And the same can be said for a lot of the other things, even something like physical impairment. When people have cognitive problems, they have if their brain's like not functioning well, it has a hard time coordinating the physical function of the body, like walking evenly, that kind of thing, and not tripping, maintaining your balance, motor planning. Like, so there's a pretty intimate relationship between your brain function and the function of the rest of your body also. So they're all entwined. We don't know. But what we wanted to raise the possibility was that, I mean, as it is now, I think a lot of football players, especially if they've experienced a lot of concussions, if they're having cognitive problems, they just, I mean, not to speak for a whole bunch of people, some probably don't, but I think there's a feeling that they're doomed. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, I had these concussions. Of course, I can't remember, my memory's going and I can't plan stuff. But we just wanted to raise the possibility that there may be other things going on with them, that if they're treated, their cognitive situation could improve.
Right, right. And that was, so basically from a treatment perspective, it might not matter which one comes first, or like you said, these relationships are complicated, but maybe if you start to address some of these factors anyways, you'll see an improvement or less of a decline.
In any case, like, it's important to treat these things anyway. So just raising the fact that the guys who are having cognitive problems have a lot of pain, they have physical impairment, they have depression and anxiety. Well, you want to treat all those things anyway. And, you know, it may be that they are being treated and the treatments haven't worked, or, you know, this is how badly they're doing even after the treatment. Maybe they were doing worse before. But I think still there's a lot of untreated illness, especially psychological symptoms. I mean, we know depression is really undertreated. Like, maybe half of people who have depression don't receive any treatment. So, you know, even if it doesn't help their cognitive function at all, they're going to be better off if they're treated.
Yeah. I on a quick anecdote, I heard of a digital health company that created a program for depression and sleep, and they were using the sleep program for the people who were depressed and noticing their depression improved without even like actually treating the depression with a depression specific program. So that kind of, you know, and you mentioned sleep problems, including sleep apnea in your study. I was thinking about that too.
These things are tricky. They are so intertwined. And, you know, having sleep problems is really, really affects the rest of your health quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
And at the same time, being obese is one of the major risk factors for sleep apnea. So,
right.
And a lot of the former football players are carrying around a lot of weight. I mean, they're pretty heavy. And, I mean, that's another thing I think that really needs to be addressed by the NFL, but, you know, it needs to be recognized as an issue as they leave the NFL so they can perhaps set a lifestyle that will be amenable to maintain a healthy weight.
Right.
Because, you know, the fact that so many of these guys have to gain weight to be good at their job, I think perhaps raises the bar on staying healthy later on.
Right. That's an excellent point. So, you know, you said, you know, like, some people play football and they just kind of, you know, at that level, the NFL, most competitive, and they're like, well, this is just part of it. You're going to get hit in the head a lot. and I'm going to experience cognitive decline maybe later in life. And obviously there's been some high profile cases of that in the news. In your opinion, and I know this is just an opinion, but how much of an impact would addressing these modifiable risk factors have on cognitive decline in these football players?
Well, again, we really don't know because, right, as you say, it could, you know, so we compared guys who had experienced a lot of concussions with other guys who had also experienced a lot of concussions. So we were holding the concussion situation constant, but it could be that, you know, sometimes you get a concussion, but your brain is resilient for whatever reason, you know, because of things you've done before, or because just by chance it the type of concussion it was, or because of genetics. And because your brain's resilient, you don't get depressed, you don't get anxious, and you don't have cognitive problems. So, you know, it could be something that's sort of way back in time, and that we're just picking up those associations. But I do think that I do think people's quality of life could be substantially improved if these things could be addressed. And I, you know, which is not to say they're easy to solve. None of these things I think are easy to solve. And for example, if you take pain, like it's easy to say treat pain, but as we know, there are a lot of problems associated with some of the pain medications.
Yeah.
And in fact, some of them affect your cognitive function.
Right.
So it's definitely challenging. I don't want to understate how challenging, you know, it's easy to say just treat it, but it's not necessarily so straightforward. At the same time, I think probably there's some proportion of players who would respond well to treatment.
Right. I mean, it doesn't seem like there's really a downside to creating more awareness about these factors anyhow.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, people are always saying, oh, lose weight, exercise. Like if it were that easy to do, everyone would do it.
I know.
So, but, you know, nonetheless, they are really good for you if you can manage to get it to happen.
Right. Yeah. So do you think more needs to be done by the NFL, the stakeholders, in terms of lessening the incidence or the prevalence of head trauma in the game itself?
It does seem like that's critical because the concussions are so strongly associated with not just the cognitive function, but also depression and anxiety. Clearly the best thing to do would be to eliminate concussions. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, you can't, I don't think you can have a contact sport with no concussions, but, you know, you could make it a lot safer. And it seems like, this is really way outside of my knowledge area, but it does seem as though the NFL is doing some things, maybe only for the sake of publicity, but they do seem to, for example, they're really stepping on the whole, you know, hitting people with your head thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's got to be helpful. I would be interested to see some data as to whether the rule changes have reduced the incidence of concussion. I don't know. So that's a live question.
Yeah. I mean, and I this is outside my area of expertise too. I don't know, like, I'm sure they've designed these helmets, you know, new helmets and stuff like that. I just, because the association is so strong, it was like over four times as higher, right?
Yeah. It's very pronounced. And you know, there's some, for any, you know, skeptics who might be listening, there's definitely some issue with the way our data is collected because it's cross-sectional. So the guys are reporting on the concussions they experienced retrospectively, and in some cases it's like 20 years ago. So that's problematic because
recall bias.
Who could remember what happened to you 20 years ago, first of all? So there's going to be a lot of forgetting. Then what you're saying, like there's a potential bias where if you're a former player who's feels as though he's experiencing cognitive problems, he may have a much better recollection of the concussions because he's thought about it a lot. Yeah, oh, I was hit so badly in that game. You know, I was knocked unconscious. Mm. And that's why I'm having these problems, whereas someone who was hit just as hard might not remember it if they don't feel as though they have any problems as a result now.
Mm.
So that's a major issue with this kind of data.
Right. Yeah. But I still think that it's very important and raises an important issue. I know you mentioned that the 4 times, but what was the rate of, do you know how many times the increased rate for depression and anxiety, the numbers on that?
Between depression and anxiety and cognitive problems?
Or number of concussions?
Oh, do you mean the risk from concussions on depression? That was actually, we published a paper on that a while back. I can dig that out.
I was just curious.
Yeah, we've got that. Let me see. Oh, yeah, I should say, you know, in our previous paper, we looked at more objective measures of football exposures, namely number of seasons and position. I mean, a guy's not going to misremember that he played running back when actually he was a quarterback if he's having cognitive problems. I mean, you say, oh, right, he's having serious cognitive problems, but not that serious, you know.
Right.
So we did find that, for example, you look, the positions that reported the lowest concussions were kickers, punters, and quarterbacks. Which certainly kickers and punters is not at all surprising.
Right.
Quarterbacks may surprise some people because they think, oh, they get hit a lot. But you have to keep in mind that some fraction of the quarterbacks never play. So you have the sort of career backups.
Yeah.
So we have those guys in our study too. And they, you know, they never play. So they don't get concussions. But anyway, we found a very strong association with both the position and with the number of the years in the NFL with cognitive problems.
Wow.
So if you played like running back and you were in the NFL for 10 years, like 16% of those people had poor cognitive functioning. Whereas if you were a kicker and you were in the NFL for only 2 to 4 years, only 2% of them had cognitive problems. So 2 versus 16%. Like that's pretty profound. And there's no bias there really.
Right. Well, and that makes sense. You know, the position thing.
So for depression, you asked about depression. Let's see. So we have concussion. Yeah, five times risk.
5 times. So, oh, wow. So that's high. That's really high, too.
That was, again, that's in quarters. So you look at the 25% of the guys who experienced the most or report that they experienced the most concussions were 5 times more likely to meet the criteria for probable depression. And they were also 5.5 times more likely to meet probable anxiety.
Wow.
And you know, these things are what we call dose response. So the more concussions you experience, the higher your risk. It goes like 2%, I'm sorry, 2 times, 3 times, and then 5 times, depending on which, you know, how many concussions you'd experienced.
Right. So, I mean, that's kind of the elephant in the room is the concussions, the head trauma.
Yeah. Concussions it's a really big thing. Like you don't want to be hitting your brain. It's just not a good idea.
Well, you know, I remember when I played soccer, they even told us like if we head the ball too much, or like, you know, we could hurt our brain that way. And we would do these like intense heading drills. I never thought of it during practice. It was just trying to like, you know, head the ball over someone's head or head it into the goal. But it does make you think, you know, because, you know, obviously when you're playing, you're trying to win. You're not thinking about like, how are things going to be later in life?
Right. I mean, that is an area of some like controversy and discussion, I know, in the field of sports medicine. I haven't looked at those papers that carefully, but it's definitely a question because those aren't concussions typically. I mean, when people, obviously the soccer player hits the ground hard or hits the goalpost hard or hits another player's head. They can get very serious concussions, but heading, you know, you probably don't have concussion symptoms after. So that would be like a subconcussive blow.
Yeah.
There's some thinking that those might even, there's some people think that those could actually be worse for your brain than actual concussions. I'm not exactly sure why, but then other people think maybe they're not as big of a deal. So
that's interesting.
I think it's not well known.
So what would you say, like, you know, sometimes parents are hesitant to put their sons or, you know, I guess their daughters even, I don't know what's going on today, but like if they put them in football, especially, I mean, you know, you can take a hit in high school and college. Is that a valid concern? Like, should parents be concerned?
Well, I mean, you know, you've heard the statistics probably about how few people end up in professional sports. Yeah. I mean, especially something super competitive like football. It's like,
yeah,
it's incredibly low fraction of, you know, high school players are going to ever be in the pros. So, I mean, what's really more relevant to your mom and dad is, you know, what are the effects of high school football? Obviously, if you want to prevent your kid from becoming a college player, preventing them from becoming a high school player is a good way to do that. You know, so like there's really, really very few people who didn't play high school and college football who become professionals, you know, maybe a handful.
Right.
So it's really a question more about high school football and college football. Mm. Some of our data actually speaks to college football because we looked at guys who... So, you know how I was saying before about you see a difference by position in how much their risk of cognitive impairment is?
Mm-hmm.
So what we did was we looked at guys who had only been in the NFL for 1 year.
Hmm.
And we still saw a very strong relationship between their position and their risk of cognitive problems. And I attribute that to their previous exposure to concussions.
Interesting.
Of course, something bad could have happened in their 1 year in the pros, but it seems much more likely that it was a result of the different concussion exposure that you get in the different positions in college and even perhaps high school football. I think, you know, bottom line, I think concussions are really a bad injury, and I think it's not a good idea to put your kid out there at risk, particularly if they've had a concussion. The other thing we know about concussions is the more you've had, the greater your risk of getting a subsequent one.
Mm, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So in particular, soon afterwards, which is why they've instituted this whole concussion protocol in the NFL, because your brain is very vulnerable. I don't know for how long, maybe a month afterwards. I mean, it's different in men and women. So I think women are vulnerable for longer.
Yeah.
And it may also differ by age, you know, the whole developing brain thing with the high school kids. But we don't really know in which way that goes, because there's some possibility that, oh, developing brain, it can still grow. It's more resilient. It can recover.
Right.
Whereas an adult's brain, you know, they're more or less done. So they're toast if they get hit. We don't know.
Right.
But, yeah, personally, my feeling is if your kid gets a bad concussion, that should be... It's my personal feeling, like that's enough of the kind of high risk sports.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that makes sense. So I guess my final question here, I mean, your paper brings out like very specific modifiable risk factors. You know, like there's a lot of them in your paper there's lots of things that I was thinking, oh, you could do this, you could do that for, you know, to address these things. Do you know if the NFL is doing this? Have they looked at your research or the results of the study in general and are like, oh, maybe we can incorporate that? You know, because some of these things, when I was thinking, I was like, well, the earlier you know about this stuff, right, like how to prevent obesity or just kind of the awareness of it earlier on in life, rather than, you know, first learning about it when you're in your 50s, might be more beneficial. To kind of make it mainstream in the program. Is there anything being done about them?
Yeah, I'm not, again, I don't really know much about this except what I've heard while working on this study. Sometimes we get in groups with the former players, we have player advisors. You know, those are the guys you should have on your show and ask them about this. What the NFL offers, I think over the years, the NFL has offered more stuff, probably as a result of pressure by the Players Association. And they have there are things run by the Players Association, like mental health supports, and there's some kind of health insurance. Again, just I'm really not the right person to ask about this, but this is just stuff I've heard. I think, you know, I do think things could be done. It's not to me to say who. I don't really know what the structure
right.
of these organizations is.
I don't either.
Yeah, no, I think it's, you know, over the years, you know, the NFL responds to stuff. I won't make a judgment about whether it's way too slow or reasonable, because some things are way too slow. But for example, they have more financial advising now. Because I think it used to be when players started to get paid more, which took a while. I mean, the early players were not paid much. But, you know, there was an issue if they don't know
how to manage that money. And I think a lot of them were not managing it wisely. And so they've done something to try to help them with that. So that's been institutionalized. And I do think other things could be institutionalized in terms of easing their way out. I mean, there is a big issue with there are a lot of guys who are sort of barely in the NFL, or they're in and they're out. You know, they sign with one team and then they're out for a month, and then they sign with another team, and then they have the off season, and then, you know, maybe they play for a year or two, and then
it's true.
So it's not you know, it's not like, okay, you go to work for IBM and then 20 years later you retire.
Right.
It's a lot less well defined than that.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. You only think about kind of like these superstar names that you hear.
Exactly. And that is not the bulk of the players.
Right. I don't want to take up too much of your time here, but it was really interesting chatting with you, and thanks so much. I hope I didn't take away from your nightly activities. My last question is, are you doing any more research in this area, or?
Yeah, no, I'm continuing with the Football Players Health Study, and cool. We also had a paper looking at race differences in health outcomes.
Oh.
And we're looking at, now we're going to take a look at some early childhood factors to see how those are associated with some of the health outcomes that really affect the players, like obesity and cardiovascular and joint pain and stuff like that.
Interesting. Well, yeah, I'll keep me in the loop, or, you know, I'll look for those when you guys publish them. I think that's all interesting.
Glad that you're interested. Happy to talk about the research.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Roberts. I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Sure. Yeah. My pleasure.
Have a good night.
Okay, you too.
Bye.
All right, guys. I want to thank you for tuning in. I hope you got something out of that. I know I did. Feel free to share it, subscribe, comment. You can follow me on Instagram or Facebook. Mostly these days, we talk about this stuff on my Facebook page. At Dr. Eakes is the name, but it comes up as Blooming Wellness. I apologize for some of the background noise there. I did my best to edit some of it out with the time I have, but this podcast is a side project. I don't get paid to do this, but to me, you know, I work in public health, and the more I work in public health, the more I realize that it really just boils down to communication and connecting to people and getting them to not only care about health issues, but understanding them. So it's all about getting through. And that's, you know, probably the biggest reason that I decided to do this podcast, even though I am in no way, shape, or form an audio or tech guru. But here we are. So again, thanks for listening. Stay healthy, happy. And if you have any suggestions for topics or whatever, just write me through my website or my email, Erin@bloomingwellness.com. All right, guys, take care.